All right. what a week, huh? Boy, welcome to People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. This is the show, mini-sode this week. Felt like I needed to jump on this topic while it's hot, while it's fresh. Just because, I mean, obvious reasons. It feels important to talk about, to go through, just to put out something that's sort of an official statement of where I'm at and how I'm feeling. And of course, as always, open to discussion from you. Let me know your feelings, your thoughts, your opinions, your counterpoints to my points. Please, you can DM me at the People Pleaser Instagram handle if you wish. Hope people enjoyed that that retrospective, that look back last week. That was really fun to put together. And I know it was a long episode, but to make up for it, this will be a shorter episode. Anyways, let's start off here with some good news. To state the obvious, Joe Biden has been elected the 46th president of the United States, with Kamala Harris, the first female, first half black, first South Asian, first lots of things, vice president elect of the United States. Fantastic news. It's fantastic news for everybody. It's fantastic news for Americans and for our future, and a win for our values. So far, they're still tabulating numbers. I'm recording this on Wednesday, the 11th, and CNN has some poll results that are still coming in. And this was posted about 20 minutes ago, that Joe Biden currently has a popular vote lead of 77,482,932 votes to Donald Trump's 72,304,817. That's over 5 million votes. Hillary won the popular vote by 3 million votes. Now, I was heading into this election looking at the record number of mail-in ballots. They had about 100 million mail-in ballots, just a crazy record. It just dwarfs anything that has come before in previous elections. And we knew this going in for obvious reasons because of the pandemic. But those numbers and the numbers of young voters, just the record numbers of voters from urban areas and suburban areas around urban cities, it was all looking really good to me. Heading in, I was hoping for a popular vote victory in the neighborhood of 6 to 10 million, so that even if Trump somehow was able to pull off another electoral victory, it would still be like, these numbers are insane. Like, you lost the popular vote by so much. And early on Tuesday and on Wednesday, there were a lot of people posting about how it was disappointing that it was as close as it is. And I get that, but it is nice to see that the more that ballots are counted, it really it wasn't all that close at all. And there's going to be, you know, probably when all is said and done, like a 5.5 million vote difference between the two. And that's significant. That's beefy. That's very significant. And I think it's important to start off with that good news. The Biden and Harris ticket is probably going to win with over 300 electoral votes and about 5.5 million popular votes, and that's a lot to overturn if you're going to the Supreme Court and looking for a recount and looking for you know, something to contend with. That's, boy, 5.5 million votes and a hell of a lot of electoral votes to overturn. I mean, you pretty much have to win all of those cases in all of those states where you're filing lawsuits. I don't want to get into the bad news just yet. I want to take a second to just let that good news sink in. Let the news that overwhelmingly more people who have ever voted in the history of a presidential election chose to repudiate the man Donald Trump, and chose to fire him and say, we don't like the job you did. We think that you were the wrong guy for the job from the beginning, and we think that you're bad for the country, and we want you and everything you stand for gone. So that's it's good news. It's disappointing that he was ever there in the first place, and it's sure disappointing that over 72 million people voted to keep him there. Those things are disappointing, absolutely. But I do think that before I get into the discussion that we're about to have, or the conversation that I'm about to have at you, it's important to first say that that's some good news, and congratulations to everyone who voted to make this happen. And to those who feel otherwise, if you're listening, wow, brave of you, and I commend you for being here with us. Thank you for trying to at least examine a different point of view. But I want to say to you right out of the gate here, before we enter into what I'm about to talk about, I want to say that I understand that your convictions are real. And what I mean by that is I don't think that they're based on real and factual information. I think that they are real to you, that your feelings are real, that you feel like something bad has happened, some fraudulent, bad, scary activity has taken place. I don't think that people are lying about this when they say this, when they say that it's fraud. I think that Donald Trump is lying. I think he knows he's lying. I think that his behavior leading up to the election displays that he is lying. I think that he has shown us that he planned all along to say that it was fraud if he lost. He said this in 2016 when he ran against Hillary Clinton. They said, "What will you do if you lose, sir? Will you accept the results of the election?" And he said, "No, if I lose, I'm going to say that it was fraud." He's always said that this is his game plan. So yeah, nobody was surprised by this. And I saw a lot of that too on Wednesday and Thursday and really Tuesday night when he first came out and claimed victory and claimed fraud. I saw a lot of people saying, "Well, we knew that he was going to do this." And that's true. We did know that he was going to do this. I think what's been hard to deal with for myself and maybe for others is I don't think we were prepared for how fervently and sincerely his supporters were going to be with him in lockstep, that they were going to fully agree with and support his claims of fraud and foul play in this election. For me, I think I thought that people would see through it because it just seems so patently ridiculous on its face. Like if you asked, I got into a discussion with a friend and we were talking about football. Like I said, I said if you asked the coach of a football team, you know, who lost the Super Bowl or who was playing this in the Super Bowl, if you said, "Hey, sir, you know, what will you do if your team loses the game?" And he said, "Well, if we win, it's going to be great. And if we lose, I'm going to claim that we were cheated and I'm going to sue until we win." When they lose and he says, "We were cheated and I'm going to sue till we win," you wouldn't take him seriously, you know? And my buddy responded, he said something like, "Well, if it was, you know, in the case of like the New England Patriots who had a history of cheating," and he's referring to that the Democrats supposedly have a history of cheating, that this is nothing new, that the Democratic establishment is seasoned in stealing elections. He's saying, "Well, then you would want to look into those allegations." And I'm seeing a lot of people saying, you know, "How come the Democrats don't want us looking into this? You know, who wouldn't want a fair election or a recount? Why don't they want transparency?" I don't really actually see anyone who's against recounting or even going through with ridiculous lawsuits. Like, I'm fine personally with doing whatever it is we have to do to substantiate the election results. I'm confident that they are legitimate. The only thing that scares me is that Donald Trump will do anything he has to do in order to win, including potentially trying to get the Supreme Court to come up with some kind of, I don't know, who knows, some kind of legal loophole that I don't see how it could happen, but I'm just saying he's the kind of person who will go to any lengths to get what he wants, and that scares me. What also scares me is just, like I said, the fervency with which his supporters are behind him. But if there are any supporters here listening, again, I understand that the things that you believe right now, that you genuinely believe them. And again, like I said, I don't think that the guy who's telling you these things actually believes them. I think that he's made it very clear that he was always going to say this is what happened if he lost. And that to me doesn't bode well for credibility. If a person tells you that they're going to, that they're planning on saying they were cheated only if they lose, but if they win, then it was fine. But if they lose, they're going to, they're planning on saying they were cheated, and they're planning on saying they were cheated by the mail-in vote when they know that the mail-in vote is going to be overwhelmingly against them. They, like, he's preparing the stage. He's setting the stage for what it is that he's going to say happened if he loses. It just, it really doesn't look good for his credibility. So I guess I thought that people would see that, that people would, because I have a lot of friends who support him, who agree that he's a blowhard and an imbecile and an idiot, and then he constantly makes himself look bad on stage, but they say that they like his policies. So I guess I just figured that all of those people who agree that he's kind of an idiot and kind of a narcissistic, blowhard moron who constantly puts his foot in his mouth, but who just like his policies, I guess I thought that they would all see through the ridiculousness of him telling us all that he was going to cry fraud and then doing it. I guess I was just surprised that they all bought into it. And if I'm being as fair as I possibly can, I guess the reason is that this is just hard. It's just, it's hard to lose, and it's scary. So I'm trying to move through this discussion with that in mind and with compassion, and I'm going to try to be as reasonable and as fair and respectful as possible, but I am going to be direct, and I'm going to say what I think. So cool, we had a little bit of good news. Now let's move into some of this. Now, so there's, I was told by this same friend online who I talked to about the football analogy. He said something to me. He said, "Isn't it crazy that both of us can be so convinced that we have the right information and that the other person is drinking bad Kool-Aid? Isn't that crazy?" And I agree. It is crazy. I think maybe one of the most accurate things that Alex Jones ever did, I don't know if he's the person who did this, but is to name his show InfoWars, because that is actually what seems like is going on in our world today. If you watch that documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma, or if you've kept up on, you know, anything that's happened since the inception of the internet with society, it really does seem like it's actually a war of information. And depending on where you get your information from, it can form your worldview. And people can basically these days formulate an argument for pretty much any position that they want, and they can have sources that they cite, and they might not be sources that are considered reputable by mainstream like academic journals or you know journalism sources that have, you know, integrity and that that have been, you know, kind of time tested and time honored institutions. They may not be accepted, but if your worldview is that the mainstream organizations are all corrupt, then that works with your worldview, right? But my point is, in this age of info wars, you can come up with an argument to support any position. There is a reason why the Flat Earth Society exists. There's a reason why people genuinely believe that they have good evidence and good, credible information to support the idea that we live in a terrarium, a flat terrarium with a glass ceiling, like a domed ceiling that has edges, and that we do not live on a sphere. And you can watch videos where people lay out the evidence that they've been collecting and read full essays of people who have been studying this for years, who really feel like they're doing the good work by being skeptical and by not accepting what the mainstream information sources are giving them. And this is kind of the environment that this war of information creates. And so, yeah, it is interesting that two people can believe so strong that the information that the other person has is bad and that the information they have is right. And it does become very confusing as to how do you know that your information is correct and the other person's information is incorrect. And I think that one big thing that everyone should be willing to do, no matter what side you're on, is be just as skeptical and critical of your own views as you are of your opposition's. And a few easy ways to do that are if someone makes an accusation at someone that you support, rather than instantly saying, that's no way, like wherever you got that from, you probably got it from and citing some source that you don't think is credible. You probably got that from OAN, from Fox News, if you're criticizing someone on the right, or if you're on the right, you go, you probably got that from CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post, you know, those crackpot institutions. But whatever it is, you instantly kind of throw out the idea as it must be false. You must have the wrong information. But I think it behooves everyone, no matter what your position is, to be just as diligent in researching claims made against positions or people that you support as you are in researching claims made against positions or people that you oppose. So just to take two, you know, Joe Biden being a pedophile, it's a very commonly used argument by the right. It's kind of one of their favorite go-to things. And I heard it enough over the last couple of years that I decided to just go, well, hey, maybe I just don't know and there really is hard evidence out there of this. I've looked into this sincerely. I've read everything from deep alt-right conspiracy theory stuff to like more centrist stuff to you know, debunking things on the left and as far as I can tell, the inception of this idea and the perpetuation of this idea and this argument all stems from a handful of photographs of Joe kind of kissing young women on the forehead in photo ops and sort of being like maybe overly familiar with some young women that he's related to, like some are granddaughters and people that he's related to, and some are just like people who are there for photo ops. And like it's more like you hear the moniker Creepy Joe, and it seems more in line with creepiness or overfamiliarity or just kind of like a not really understanding boundaries than it does with full-blown pedophilia. There, as far as I've been able to find in my research and looking into it, I can't find any actual accusations or evidence that pedophilia is a thing that exists in Joe Biden's world, that's an issue that the Biden family has tried to push down and hide. Now, on the other side of that, what's so fascinating about Trump supporters is that they love to come up with critiques of Joe Biden that Donald Trump is kind of more blatantly guilty of, because in all of my researching of Joe Biden, I could only find a handful of like photos of him looking minorly creepy. Now I can find photos with Donald Trump, who is doing the exact same thing with young women, and even worse, there's videos of him trying to like kiss little girls on the mouth, and like they're pulling away and he keeps trying to kiss them. And so there's that. So there's kind of the exact same stuff that these people are looking at for Joe Biden. You can find this stuff for Donald Trump. But then there's also actual allegations from underage women of sexual assault against Donald Trump. Now, this doesn't exist, as far as I can find, for the Biden family, but it does exist for the Trump family. Now, for both of these men, nothing like this has ever been actually substantiated or held up in a court of law, and I think that's important for me to say in the interest of being fair, but I just find it interesting that one of the most common things that people run with on the right is this idea of Joe the pedophile. But when there's actually more evidence to support that Donald Trump is a pedophile than there is that Joe Biden's a pedophile. And I know this by being just as skeptical and critical of the accusations against my guy as against the other guy. And the other one, you know, the other thing that people talked about a lot, and these are just, I'm just picking out two things. There's lots of these all the time. This is part of the InfoWars tapestry. The other thing that people like to pick out is, you know, Hillary's emails. What happened with crooked Hillary and her emails? Why didn't she go to jail? She should have been locked up. That one's actually simpler to research. It's simpler to look into that. It turns out, unless you believe that the entire institution of the FBI is bought and paid for by the Democratic establishment and the liberal establishment, the FBI did an investigation, a thorough investigation into the email scandal. If you don't know about this, or if you don't know the details, basically there were just hundreds of thousands of emails that Hillary Clinton sent while she was Secretary of the State in the Obama administration, and she sent them on several servers that were not specifically her work server, and it appeared that there could be some impropriety there, or some evidence of her trying to hide some information, that she was trying to make it look like it was a personal email, but actually it was a work email. So the FBI felt like there was enough cause to the allegations of impropriety to do a full-blown investigation. They did do that investigation. They looked into about 400,000 emails. It might even be more than that, because they found like 360,000 additional emails when they found the Anthony Weiner hard drives. And they looked through every single one of these things, and they double and triple checked their work, and everyone came back with the same conclusion that they couldn't find anything that resembled evidence of criminal wrongdoing or negligence. All they could really, really accuse her of at the end of the day was just kind of carelessness, was just like, it looks like she was being a little bit careless with her usage of these different servers for work-related purposes, and her team should have been more diligent about making sure that work-related messages come from one specific email address and on one specific server, that they keep all of that really, really transparent and clean. And that's all they could really come up with, was that it was just carelessness. Now, you can look into that and you can conclude that that's just the FBI, I guess, being buddy-buddy with the Clintons, once you get into that realm, it's so hard, because you have to believe in a worldview where somehow the Clintons and the liberal establishment have sort of bought and paid for many massive institutions that are in charge of making sure that the world runs above board, and that you know, wrongdoing is accounted for. And yeah, but we'll get into that later. Anyway, my point is, I think what a person needs to do in order to mitigate the issue of so much information being out in the world is just be willing to be just as accepting of allegations against your positions as you are of other people's positions. Just be, you know, do a little research, you know, try to be thorough, try to disprove your own ideas. And that's one way. And the other way is, so my buddy, again, the same person that I was talking to, he told me that I needed to go listen to Steve Crowder's latest podcast, Louder with Crowder. Steve Crowder is this just obnoxious, repugnant personality who's a far-right, free speech-thumping guy who believes that the mainstream media is evil and constantly lies, and that he's the only one telling the truth. I went to go listen to his episode to do what I just said I want to do. I want to make sure that I am giving credence to my opposition's arguments, and that I'm listening to their allegations, because my buddy's telling me that Steve Crowder's got hard evidence that proves that there was voter fraud in this election. And I don't want to just go nah, you're crazy. You're wrong. If that's true, I want to hear about it. So I go and listen to this thing, and within the first 5 minutes, he's called Joe Biden a pedophile like four times. And he's kind of one of those guys who goes out of his way to make lazy, misogynistic, and homophobic and racist jokes because it's like he's like making a statement about not, you can't censor me and you can't stop me from making the kind of jokes that I want to make. And like, that's the base that he's appealing to. It's not necessarily because like he actually thinks those things. It's more the statement that he's making about free speech and you can't censor me. And, but at the end of the day, it's like, why is the point, the hill that you want to die on, I need to be allowed to make, you know, racist jokes and misogynistic jokes, and I need to be able to like use the R word when I want to, and I, you know, like, why is that the hill you want to die on? Like, anyway, whatever. So Steve Crowder listed a bunch of the arguments that I've already seen going around on the internet. I honestly did not hear anything in his show that I hadn't already heard from people, the talking about in Michigan and Pennsylvania that Republicans were being denied meaningful access to vote counters and weren't being able to allow to meaningfully watch the process take place. Talking about the, you know, the Sharpie gate, that Sharpies were being handed out in at ballot centers in Arizona, and talking about videos in Michigan of people altering ballots. One thing that's interesting about all these theories is it's fascinating how many different methods they're alleging took place. Doesn't it seem like it would be easier to just pick one, to say they hired a team of hackers to like hack into the systems in these states and just sort of like fudge the numbers? It's weird the amount of different things that they say are being done, that ballots for Trump are being found and thrown into rivers and burned, like as if someone could somehow sort through a ballot box and determine from all these closed envelopes which ones are for Trump and which ones are for Biden, and sort through enough of those to have thousands of them and then like light them on fire. Like the process of actually getting access to where the ballots are being kept in these ballot boxes and then sorting through them to it, it's just, it's so crazy. So that's one thing that's being done. Then there's also the theory of dead voters being on different states' registrars, that thousands of dead voters are registered and are voting. The theory that Wisconsin had more people vote than were registered to vote. The multitude of different things that are being alleged. It's so weird, the disjointed and chaotic efforts that they seem to think that whoever carried out this fraud went to, that they thought, let's not just fudge the numbers in a few key swing states. Let's do like 30 different things, like in 30 different places. I guess, is that the idea, just to create overall chaos? It seems like a weird strategy. If I were a person who was thinking that these were legitimate, but luckily, I'm the kind of person who, when Steven Crowder says, hey, you know, Wisconsin had more people vote than were registered to vote, I can look that up and go, is that true? And if I go to the Wisconsin election website, I think it's like election.wisconsin.gov, right there, they tell me how many people were registered to vote. And there were about 400,000 more people registered to vote on November 1st, 2020 than who actually voted. So I can fact check these things. And pretty much all of these claims, the Sharpie gate, that was fact checked. Arizona, the ballot centers that handed out Sharpies said that they are accepting Sharpies for Biden and Trump, said that they are accepting ballots with Sharpie. And that's why they were handing them out. I mean, the videos of Trump ballots being burned, I already talked about how insane it would be to actually be able to get ballots that are Trump ballots. Like, a ballot looks like a ballot. It's not marked with a big T, and then the Biden one is marked with a big B. They're closed ballots. But those were debunked and proven to be false. the claims that Republicans weren't allowed access to view counting taking place. In every place where a suit has been filed, according to that, the judge has said, has gotten the lawyers to admit that the Republicans actually were present. They just were displeased with how close they were allowed to get. And the judge has said, you made a fraudulent claim in this suit by saying you weren't allowed to be present, and these suits are being thrown out. These things are not hard to fact check. So I think Crowder, one of his smoking gun moments on the show was he played a clip from Fox News. And this is where we're at, is Fox News, of all people. Fox News had a woman on who was coming on to offer up evidence of voter fraud. And before she could start listing her evidence, one of the reporters at Fox News cut her off and said, I think I know what she's about to say, and I think we shouldn't actually air this because it's all been disproven and debunked and it's actually bad information. And he cut her off. This is Fox News. This is like Donald Trump's like home team here. Cutting this woman off and not allowing her to share this quote-unquote evidence that has been debunked. Now, Crowder says this is hard proof that the establishment is censoring hard evidence that's coming out against that proves voter fraud took place. And he's, you know, he kind of says, don't journalists have a responsibility to let people hear all of the information? Don't they have a responsibility to let people make up their own minds? And I thought that question was interesting. That was a part where I thought, well, you know, maybe he has a point. Maybe even if the journalist at Fox News believes that what this woman is about to say is false information that has been proven false information, maybe he has a responsibility to his viewers to let her say her piece. But I don't know. I think it's an interesting question to bring up, because if the journalistic integrity of someone at Fox News is their alarms are just sounding, and they think, you know what, I can't just let this person say stuff that has been proven to be false on air. We need to stop them. I don't know. To me, I have to go to like an Occam's razor thing of like, what's more likely, that Fox News, who has always tilted right and always been in favor of the president, has somehow in the last moment, in the 11th hour of this election cycle, the Dems got to him, the Libs got to him, and were able to purchase Fox News and were able to purchase their interests and shift Fox News into being part of the mainstream media propaganda campaign for progressivism and leftism and socialism and communism. What's more likely, that that happened, or that this guy knows that the information that this woman was about to share has been widely and roundly disproven and fact-checked over and over and over again in the last few days, and he just thought, you know what, it's actually journalistically irresponsible for us to allow her to say this when we know that it's false. Just like it would be journalistically irresponsible for us to allow a doctor on air and who says, you know what, actually, coronavirus isn't a thing, and anyone who tells you it's a thing, they're lying and it's a hoax. Like, journalists can't do that. They can't let people who they know are lying come on TV and speak unless those people are the president of the United States. Hey, yo, you like what I did there? Bet you didn't see that coming. But yeah, it does seem like so often in the Trump administration, they were like, should we allow him to keep speaking? And several times, I mean, like recently, he was cut off by people on MSNBC and by Fox News, and who just said, we're not going to allow him to go on TV and lie about the American election system. Again, Trump supporters accusing the left of what they're actually doing. Everyone's saying, you guys are trying to steal and undermine the democratic process, when that's literally what Donald Trump is doing. He is literally trying to undermine confidence in American democracy and steal the election. And it's what he said he was going to do. It's kind of like, I used to believe in the conspiracy theories about 9/11, okay? I'll go ahead and throw my hands up in the air and say I used to believe in that. And the more I looked into it, the older I got, you know what became overwhelmingly clear? that Osama bin Laden coordinated that attack. And you know why I started believing that? Because I started looking into Osama bin Laden and I started watching what he was saying in the lead up to that attack. And he just said that he was going to do that. And then when he did it, he said, "We did that." So I just went, what's more likely, this massive coordinated secret attack or the fact that this guy who said he was going to do it and then when it happened said, yeah, I did that, that he did that? And I mean, so that's what's going on right now. Anyway, that's my experience with Steve Crowder. All of this is to say, InfoWars, Steve Crowder, you know, how do we know when there's so much information coming in from both sides? Do your research. Fact-checking isn't censorship. All of this. You know, does the news have a duty to let anyone speak? Does the news have a duty to let a flat earther come on and present their argument as to why NASA is lying about the globe theory and present bad information? Does the news actually have that responsibility? I would argue, actually, they don't. I don't think that the news has a responsibility to air all sides of an argument, even information that they know is false, and especially information in this instance that's false and dangerous. Because allowing people to believe that the things that are being alleged actually happened when we know they didn't is dangerous. It could lead to major problems, to serious issues. I mean, we're talking civil war-esque issues. So I don't actually think that the media has a responsibility to air that stuff. And I think the problem here, the problem with a lot of this information that comes from these other sources, and it's kind of the reason why I think MRAs exist, men's rights activists, and why I think white supremacy has existed for as long as it has and has survived for as long as it has. And because these MRAs, they're people who, when feminists and people on the left share statistics about violence against women and about the ways in which the patriarchy's negative effects on society can be actually quantified and measured, MRAs will always come back with their own statistics about male suicide and about men being the leaders in victimhood of violent crimes. You know, that like more men suffer from violent crimes at the hands of other men than women do, and that men lead, that more men commit suicide, and that, you know, like all this stuff. They'll come back with their own statistics about how there are no resources for men who are in abusive relationships with women, that men who are in emotionally or physically abusive relationships don't really have any resources in society. And they'll come back with their own statistics and their own information to basically promote a worldview that says it's not actually the way that you're saying it is. We don't actually live in a patriarchal, male-dominated society. We actually live in a society where men are the victims and men are subjugated to the woes, to the wills of women, that women are actually secretly behind the scenes pulling the strings and manipulating us with their sexuality. There's actually people who will gather evidence to support this idea. And it's the same way that white supremacy gets perpetrated, that when people present evidence of racism and of wrongdoing by white people, they'll come back and they'll say, you know what doesn't get reported is the amount of white people that are killed by police every year, the amount of white people that are the victims of crime, the amount, you know, they'll come back with their own statistics. And here's the issue with all of this, with all of these, the allegations of fraud and the election and everything, is all of this information, and it's similar to flat earth theory. It's all based on some actual information that's real, some actual credible information. Flat earth theory comes from people doing certain experiments that seem to prove that the earth does not have a curvature, and they come up with these different ways of demonstrating this and showing this. And even though I'm going to get to my disapproval of it later, but the core of it is based in some actual information, and the statistics about, you know, men leading suicide numbers and things like that, those are all real. What the problem with this information is, it's a half-truth, because it's not the completion of the information, because you have to go deeper on this information. And when you go deeper on any of this stuff, you can see that numbers of men being victims of violent crime perpetrated by other men, and men being committing suicide higher than in higher rates, and all this stuff, that is also a negative result of patriarchal society, that is also a negative result of toxic masculinity. It's not evidence that the world is secretly run by women. It's evidence that the system that we have is misserving both women and men. That's all it's evidence of. It's not evidence that it's actually secretly the other way around. It's evidence that the system that we have, which is clearly and demonstrably a patriarchal and sexist society, is bad for both men and women. That's all that's evidence of. You need to go further with this information. A lot of times these flat earth studies, what they're actually demonstrating is that they're not going far enough with their reach on their experiments to show curvature on the ground, because the earth is really, really, really big. And you know how you actually find out that the earth is big, or is round, sorry, and that is not flat? You actually can just do this. You can either go to the edge of the terrarium where you think it is, or you just travel until you come back to the place you started and see, whoops, I went in a big circle. You can actually do this. Airplanes exist. You can observe with your own eyes the curvature of the earth. And that's the thing, is you can observe that we live in a patriarchal, sexist society. You can observe that America is a racist country with a racist history where white people benefit from racist institutions. You can observe this. You can see it without even doing research, without even looking at numbers and figures. You can just look at the way the world appears to be and see that these are plain truths. And you don't need numbers and figures to back that up. You can see this. You can see that the earth is flat, or excuse me, that the earth is round. You can observe this truth. And in order to believe that the earth is flat, or in order to believe that it's actually the other way around and women are secretly pulling the strings, or it's actually the other way around and white people are actually the victims, in order to believe that, you need to be doing so much work to deny what is plainly evident that you can just see with your own eyes. And I don't know. I just think that, again, going back to Occam's razor, like, is everything a conspiracy? Is everything the wool's getting pulled over our eyes? Is everything a massive coordinated attempt to subdue what's actually happening, the real truth, the pizza gates, the massive organized effort of powerful leftists to enslave and have child trafficking in sex rinks? Is that what's going on? Or is it just not that complicated? Is it just what it appears to be? When you look at the incarceration rate and just see the way that it heavily, that just that it's so much worse for black men and women than it is for white people in America. When you just look at when you just look at like leadership roles in our country and see that we are still just overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly white. When you just look at the way that the map is laid out and you look at our history, you can see it without even needing to do the research. But the only reason we need to do the research is because there's people out here saying that it's not that way. There's people out here saying that the earth is flat, and so in order to make sure that people know that the earth is round, we have to, like, go and prove it with numbers and figures, even though you can just see it. You can just look. If the world, if we lived in a world that wasn't actually patriarchal, it would be easier to prove than it is. It wouldn't be this hard to prove it. So anyway, I just think, yeah, that's the problem with this information, is you've got a lot of like good starts and like good stats, but you're not going far enough on them. You're not completing them. You're not completing the thread. You're getting the information that you want, the information that agrees with the views you already have, and you're stopping there, and you need to go further. Fact-checking isn't censorship. And that brings me to the last thing I want to talk about, the thing that I'm most concerned about right now. and this is going to sound stupid, but the thing that I'm honestly most concerned about right now in everything that's going on, I'm not concerned that Donald Trump's legal team is going to somehow come up with an argument that wins in court, that overturns the results of this election, that overturns the votes of 5.5 million citizens who wanted it to be one way. I'm not concerned about that. But what I am concerned about in this country is the emergence of platforms like Parler. And if you don't know what Parler is, it's spelled P-A-R-L-E-R. And almost immediately in the wake of this historic defeat, Trump supporters and people on the right fled Twitter and Facebook for this app called Parler, which is essentially a conservative alt-right echo chamber where they can go to post whatever they want and not have to worry about being, as they would put it, censored, and as the rest of the world would put it, fact-checked. They don't want to be fact-checked, so they want to go to a place where they can just share the information that they want to share, and they don't want anyone telling them why that information is wrong or why that information is explaining to them that information has actually been clearly and roundly and debunked by people on both sides of the political spectrum, and that there is bipartisan support confirming that is not true. They don't want that. They want a place. And the funny thing about Parler is, and a lot of people are making fun of it because it is funny, it literally is an echo chamber. There is a function on the site where in order to boost people's posts and say that you agree with their posts, so, you know, on Twitter, it would be a retweet or a like or a share. They actually have a button that says echo. So they're not even, I mean, they're totally aware that what they are building is an echo chamber. It literally is people echoing each other. And that's actually a function on the site. You can't make this up. But what scares me about it, I spent some time on Parler because, again, I believe in researching my opposition's viewpoints and trying to get into where they're coming from. And unsurprisingly, this place is pretty terrifying. It's pretty just downright terrifying. I wasn't on there for longer than 2 minutes when I saw someone posting an article about how in Florida they're trying to pass an amendment to this or a new law that's similar to the Stand Your Ground law that would allow citizens to shoot and kill looters or people who are suspected of doing criminal activity near businesses. So basically just anyone points at and says that person looks like they're suspected of criminal activity, it would grant citizens the right to murder these people. Now, I don't know if this is actually true because a lot of what these people post just is they just kind of write whatever and kind of hope that it materializes as true in the universe once they've said it. But the comments on this thing, it was just like, I'm ready. There was a guy named Noose. His username was Noose, and he just said, I think we need that in all 50 states. Can't wait till the next time the looters try to come in my neighborhood and I meet them with my AR-15. Like really scary stuff. People who are just like way too excited about murdering citizens for damaging property. And what's scary about the law that's being proposed in this post is that it just says like anyone who's near where looting is taking place or anyone who looks like they were participating in looting, you can kill them. And these people were like, right on, good with me. Also, just tons of posts on this app, tons and tons and tons of posts of people basically saying, let's gear up for civil war, I'm ready, let's take it to the Capitol, let's show up with our guns and let them know who's in charge, and let's take our country back. And I mean, it's really, really scary. And what's most scary about it, going back to this idea of info wars and just the deluge of information that exists on the internet, what's most scary about this is maybe the only thing that's been protecting us from a civil war in this country is the fact that, for better or worse, for the most part, we still engage with each other on these platforms, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. We still have active comment sections where people try to engage in productive debate And obviously, if you've ever been in these comment sections, you are well aware that it's about 99.99% just toxic waste and sludge and people just tearing each other down. But at least we're not afraid of the conversation. And we're still having the conversation, even if we're not having it in a productive manner. We're willing to go point for point with each other. We're willing to go blow for blow in these comment sections. Nothing scares me more than the idea of we already have a system where the information that's coming in is widely divided. People have their sources that they are confident are right, and people have their sources that they are confident spew nothing but lies and divisive rhetoric. And just like my friend said, we're both getting information that we're certain is correct and we're certain the other person is wrong. That's already occurred. We already have this division of where the information is coming from and how it's being consumed. And we know that the numbers on each side of who's consuming it and who's buying it are significant. This isn't like the flat earth debate where it is a ridiculous minority of people who are stupid enough to actually believe that the earth is flat. This is really scary because we know that at least 72 million people in the United States believe this stuff. It's significant. It's real. Big numbers of people who buy into these ideas. And nothing scares me more than the idea of us getting to a place as a country where we have separated off even our platforms where we host these discussions and these ideas. And basically, we really have, people always call Facebook and Twitter basically just an echo chamber that people block whoever they don't like and they only have their friends on there. But if we get to a point where we actually have different places, and you could say that this has already existed, that 4chan and 8chan is already a thing, and that Reddit skews pretty far right, and you could say that this is already existing, but if we actually get to a point where we are going, this platform is for people who have this ideology, and this platform is for people who have this ideology, we could get to a point where we're staging and planning attacks on each other without even knowing it. We need to have the ability to check in with each other and to host and be willing to have debate and to have our ideas challenged. Because I don't like getting into debates or discussions online any more than anyone else does. If you know me and you follow me on any platforms, you might think that's not true. You might think that I love it. You might have seen me many, many times getting into debates with people online. The truth is, I don't actually like it. I don't like the way it makes me feel. I don't like the way that it makes the other person feel. I don't like it. I don't like that I have to do it. I don't like that I have to explain things that to me seem obvious. You know, I don't like that I would have to go in and explain to someone why thinking that murdering people for damaging property is okay is a problem. I don't know. It bothers me that that's even an idea I would have to contend with. But also, I don't know what the solution is. Because is just letting the babies have their bottle and letting them go on to Parler and talk conspiracy theories and just hoping that they go away and just hoping that they sort of self-isolate and they just sort of die out. Is that the way that we fix this problem? Because I don't see that happening with more than 70 million people who are all reproducing and who are all, you know, propagating and making sure that these ideas survive. The only way I can conceive of dealing with this is by being willing to continue to have difficult conversations with people who are willing to listen, or at least just go toe-to-toe, go blow for blow, go point for point, even if it doesn't feel like anything's being accomplished. The only way I can see us having any shot of getting through the information war is by combating bad information with good information, and trying to do it in a way where it can be received and heard by the other person. If I'm wrong about that, or if anyone has any better ideas or better solutions, more elevated, more enlightened solutions, I need them. Because I don't like having these discussions and these debates. It honestly doesn't feel good for me. It doesn't feel good for my soul. It makes me feel hopeless. It makes me feel like my it does bad things to my ego. I get all riled up in ways that aren't it's uncomfortable. But I increasingly I don't see any way around it. I don't see how just ignoring it and just sort of like keeping my thoughts to myself helps. Especially when it looks like we're heading towards some kind of inevitable physical conflict with people who oppose our ideas. I don't want that to happen, and I know that most people don't want that to happen, but I just don't... What do we do about the divide of information? We've never had anything like this in the history of the species. We've never had this much available information. So it stands to reason that the information coming out would, you know, be diverse and that it would vary. And it also stands to reason, just with the way that America typically goes, that there would be two prevailing schools of thought. That typically winds up to be how we break down as a people, as we generally fall into two prevailing schools of thought. I don't know. The only way I can see any way of getting through it is by continuing to have tough conversations. If you've got a better idea, please let me know. DM me at PeoplePleaser on Instagram. Yeah, so that's why I had to start off with good news, because I as you're all well aware, we got a ways ahead of us before we're actually out of the woods, and yeah, that's all. That's mostly what I wanted to say. Went longer than I intended to, but I hope that made some kind of sense. In the meantime, try to be kind to each other. Try to be kind to, you know, yourselves, and find an opportunity to do some service, do something nice for someone. And this week, wear a mask. All right. Love you. See you next week.